Hello and a warm welcome to Perspectives, our program that reports the issues from the viewpoints of our correspondents. My name is Kingsley Obin Chere. In this edition, the unemployment headache and the role of churches.
What are the religious bodies in Ghana doing to curb the current unemployment situation in the country?
The armpit crisis, the driver's meat, and liberation from body odor.
Unfortunately, there are some people who will still smell bad regardless of the twice-a-day shower rule. It is appalling to be greeted in the early hours of the day with that smell from armpits and clothes of some bus conductors, popularly referred to as maids.
And also, keeping Accra clean, the mayor's headache versus the people's attitude.
The presence of this saman-saman was so intimidating that I do not think it is a coincidence they are called saman, which means ghost in the Akan language. These inspectors had the power to pry into the privacy of bedrooms, inspect chamber pots.
Please be our guest. Perspectives is also available on GBC Online. Please log on to gbcghana.com and click on podcasts, and then you can enjoy the program. Meanwhile, we are streaming live on gbcghana.com. And now to the stories. Unemployment is one of the biggest headaches that political leaders across the globe are confronted with. Whilst it remains on the lips of those seeking power, those already ruling keep talking about ways they are creating jobs as a horde of young people ask where these jobs are. Recently, during the phase of the recruitment exercise for the military, the people who turned up for screening alone was enough to underline how serious the unemployment situation is. In recent times, even those trained in professional areas have resorted to what some say is an unorthodox means to get them engaged. Some nurses and teachers quickly come to mind. Yet, as the horde of unemployed youth look to government for employment, correspondent Andrew Blay is asking a big question in a different direction. To him, what are the religious bodies in Ghana doing to curb the current unemployment situation? The question might be far-fetched, but he believes there are examples to pick from the first century Christians and even the European missionaries who first stepped on Ghanaian soil. For Andrew, the churches seem to be abandoning their membership by leaving some of them to embark on dangerous trips to seek greener pastures.
The 15th century saw the arrival of European missionaries on the Ghanaian soil. Their single goal was to enlighten the people they referred to as poor blindfolds. Although their core objective was to spread the gospel, the Christian missionaries' mission was bedeviled with the socioeconomic challenges of the local people. Interestingly, as aliens as they were, they never turned their back on the challenges of the people. The Basil and Wesleyan missions were noted for their massive contribution to agriculture at the time. In the 1890s, the Basel Mission supplied ports imported from Cameroon and the West Indies to converts and urged its catechists, congregation and graduates of its schools to take to cocoa farming. This was to address rural and graduate unemployment at the time. The missionaries again stood firm against slavery and slave trade. In curbing the booming but inhumane slave trade at the time, the missionaries did not only collaborate with the colonial government to pass the Slave Emancipation Ordinance of 1874, but also bought several slaves and set them free, and also gave loans to pawns to redeem themselves. You and I know that making reference to the countless mission schools scattered across the country and their impact on education even in this current era is no news. After independence, and even till now, these churches continue to render both financial and non-financial support to those established in the country. They refer to them as orphan churches. Now, most of these churches are full-fledged and have given birth to tens of thousands one-man churches, which are equally in their high noon. I ask, what are the religious bodies in Ghana doing to curb the current unemployment situation in the country? My blood runs cold whenever I hear about the torture and trauma most vulnerable Ghanaians go through in the bid of seeking greener pastures in foreign lands. The news of the inhumane treatment does not deter most youth from traveling outside. This is because it is difficult for most of them to make ends meet in their own country. How did you receive the news that Ghana accounted for the most U.S. green card applications than any other country in the world? Why would thousands of Ghanaians travel on the Mediterranean Sea to Europe in spite of its devouring nature? Have the religious bodies lost sight of the fact that most of the 3,740 migrants who died on the Mediterranean Sea formed part of their membership? If governments have been turning a deaf ear to calls of the youth for productive ventures, what are you doing to assist them, you religious leaders whom they trust so much? It is sad how most of such leaders spend the wealth they amassed from the poor congregation on luxurious goods and services while their congregation continue to wallow in poverty because of lack of jobs. It is interesting how these same religious leaders, as a result of their links with astute politicians, lobby for better jobs for their wards, while that of the poor are denied such opportunities. Well, I often ask myself, are religious leaders only called to deliver spiritual services? Elijah fed a widow at Zarephath, and Christ fed more than 5,000 people. If it is easy to quote Muhammad, other prophets and Christ to fetch money from followers, why should it be difficult to use some of these monies for job creation? Although I do not object to the fact that some religious leaders have fiddling and itchy fingers, they should not forget the parable of the talents and the punishment meted out to the servant who failed to render a good account of his stewardship. St. Augustine once said, God who made you without you will not save you without you. Islam and most churches can be lauded for building private universities to augment the public ones. It is ridiculous how most of such institutions charge, denying access of the poor, adding followers, the same institutions built with their offerings. How do you feel when you hear that almost 99% of prostitutes, armed robbers, among other perpetrators of social vices, in order to eke out livelihoods for themselves, bear names associated with your religion? It is needless to echo the fact that poverty leads to loss of motivation, hunger, and spread of diseases. It fuels anger, tension, and frustration in the family. Ghana records about 1,500 suicide cases every year, and lack of productive ventures for the active labor force greatly accounts for that. To the best of my knowledge, early Christians lived a communal life, and none was in need among them. Ask Ananias and Sapphira. The couple sold their land and kept part of the money to themselves, violating the rule of the church. They died instantly for that. If all churches across the country declare one Sunday operation, build a factory day, and pull the offering for that day together, I tell you, the proceeds can start building factories. That will not only employ dozens of their unemployed youth, but add value to produce by farmers and increase their finances. Just as the pre-colonial and colonial missionaries helped in curbing the socioeconomic challenges at the time, I challenge religious bodies to take bold steps in complementing the efforts of government to curb the unemployment situations among the youth. This will reduce the rate of social vices, save our water bodies from destruction through galamsey, and above all, save lives of members who die in galamsey pits and on the Mediterranean Sea. They should see it as part of their solemn responsibility, especially as the doomsday's clock ticks close to midnight.
Andrew Blay filed that report. It was all joy when, after some time, this Trotsky came along. I keep telling people that they are the necessary evils of our city. We have the colanders in the rainy season among them, and you wonder whether you escaped from the rain when you hop in. You also have the seats that are sharper than scissors in full commission in an Adeyeye's possession. If they don't rip your attire, they send you running for tetanus injection. For some parts of Accra, it is like an automobile museum in motion. For many commuters, however, it is not about all the problems mentioned. It is about the people you enjoy their trip with. So on this occasion, when yours sincerely had his chance, there was a quick observation about the atmosphere. The nose is sometimes too quick to notice a few things. After that, it was all prayers to arrive alive and quickly too. Some armpits were too strong for the enclosed space, and they had succeeded in creating a vitiated environment. In the older parts of Accra, older women did not mince words at all, giving recommendations as to what people with offending armpits should do. They quickly asked whether owners of those armpits knew about lime and its telling qualities in removing odor. However, this is a recurring problem, perhaps pronounced in the Troskies, but present almost everywhere. Correspondent Naomi Tariagin has noted how unpleasant it is to be greeted by multiple odor in the morning. She wonders why some driver's mates cannot adopt simple solutions to this challenge, as she traces some of the possible causes of armpit smells.
Growing up in a compound house with my extended family was an opportunity to learn about babies. I was always found in rooms where newborns were. I love babies, so I was always seated by my grandma, who bathed most of my cousins and nieces. Although I have not given birth, I know the indigenous way of tending them, bathing, and putting to sleep when they are crabby. My grandmom used to bath the babies for close to 6 months, after which she relinquishes herself of that responsibility. Some of the tutorials to us were, make sure you don't get water into their ear, clean their armpits very well. We were told these in order to prevent any kind of bad smell during adulthood. My grandmother's children who were not well bathed during their infancy are those with strong body odor. Another group too are those who, with a little sweat, smell so bad. But I ask, if those teenagers and adults cannot observe basic personal hygiene, it can be described as the principle of maintaining cleanliness and growing of the external body. Good personal hygiene is essential to promoting good health. Hygiene can be defined as washing of hands, brushing of feet, bathing, and so on. We are taught by our parents and grannies, even sometimes parents or friends, about personal hygiene. First thing in the morning before going to school or starting the day, and also the last thing at night before retiring to bed. Unfortunately, there are some people who will still smell bad regardless of the twice-a-day shower rule. It is appalling to be greeted in the early hours of the day with that smell from armpits and clothes of some bus conductors, popularly referred to as maids. Those who suffer mostly are those who sit close to them. The average age of these maids ranges from 15 to 25. The odor, according to scientists, starts when one reaches puberty. This is when the sweat glands, which produce the sweat that bacteria, can quickly break down. Some of these maids have migrated from the rural areas in search for greener pastures in the cities. Even though life in Accra is not easy, the maids have to take their bath, use some deodorants before jumping into the buses for their daily activities. But most of these maids do not consider this as necessary. All they think of is how to make the money. Allow me to refer to this adage whether it can be applied in our commercial transport business. The customer is always right, as it is in our corporate world, especially in the banking sector and other institutions. As passengers, it seems we have no rights in public transport, and as such, we have no voice but to endure the awful smell from drivers' mates. Some of these maids migrated from other parts of the country and have no homes. That notwithstanding, there are public showers that can address that need, but these maids do not want to spend a peswa on themselves. To those with that peculiar problem, using antiperspirant will control the excessive sweat. According to experts from the Mayo Hospital in Minnesota, U.S., stress also triggers different glands that enable bacteria to act on the produce that smell. So reducing stress will address that problem. Another issue worth talking about is clothing. Wearing breathable fabrics, example cotton or silk, will be helpful. But most of these mates wear imitated rayon or spandex jerseys of their preferred foreign football stars or clubs. These kinds of materials worsen the condition. Most of these guys allow their pubic hair to grow, like something they intend harvesting. Bacteria thrives in warm and moist environment, and grown pubic hair is a fertile habitat for them. Hence, shaving clean will help them. What they should bear in mind is that they work with people from different backgrounds and with different health issues. I am appealing to car owners to inspect their conductors to make sure that they appear presentable before starting their daily routines. This alone will help ease fields and buses and give drivers maximum concentration since they have lives in their care. Another aspect is for the MTTU to come up with dress codes for all mates in public or commercial transports as it has for drivers. Finally, acid, like the one found in apple cider vinegar or lemon, which is easy to come by and affordable when applied within the armpit, will be of tremendous help. When this personal hygiene among mates are addressed, the feud that usually occurs in public transports will be reduced. What can also help is for the vehicle owners to make personal hygiene one of the conditions for drivers and their mates to keep their jobs.
Naomi Tariagin filed that report. You are listening to Perspectives, also available on GBC Online. Please log on to gbcghana.com and check on podcasts. We are also streaming live on gbcghana.com. And to our next story. Whose responsibility is it to ensure that our cities, and the capital city for that matter, is kept very clean? So much has been said about how Accra has to grapple with sanitation challenges. With a section of the population seemingly having a nonchalant attitude towards sanitation, the metropolitan authorities are compelled to grapple with this hydra-headed problem. Delving a little into history of the city, there was a time when every effort was deployed to ensure that the city was kept clean. The then Accra City Council always had its city cleaners deployed early in the morning, and the population was also policed in one way or the other with those who were called town council men. With the possibility of going to court within sanitary conditions, people made the effort to keep their surroundings clean. However, migration has changed the situation totally. What can be done to win the war against insanitary conditions? Correspondent Afre Hughes has more for us.
Not too long ago, the mayor of Accra, Honorable Mohammed Ajesowa, made the rather audacious statement that he was going to make Accra the capital city of Ghana, the cleanest city in Africa in the future. Though by principle, I am an optimist, but this declaration provoked a rather loud cynical scream out of me. This is the kind of loud cry which is silent to the extent that the closest person to you does not hear a whimper of it. You may be wondering why this skeptical stance of mine. The answer is not too far-fetched, and I know most listeners are aware of the degree of filth and insanitary conditions which have engulfed the city of Accra over the past several decades. Mayor after mayor appointed in successive governments have always seen this problem a mountain too high to climb. Whatever measures and strategies they had employed throughout the years have not succeeded in providing the much-needed antidote to cure this chronic ailment of filth. The stewardships of Honorable Yiti Mensah, Nathaniel Nunu Amatefio, Ejil Blankson, to the latest Alfred Oko Vanderpoy, just to name but a few, in my estimation, have scored below average as far as my assessment is concerned in their endeavor to conjure a magic wand to deal with the ever-present menace of filth in the city. Should one be somewhat optimistic now when the new mayor of Accra, Honorable Mohammed Ajesowa, makes that audacious declaration to win this perennial war? Perhaps this confidence and hope is deeply rooted and stems out of the president's recent pronouncements in taking the fight to the insanitary conditions in our cities and towns. The president, Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo, has gone beyond mere rhetorics and have demonstrated his resolve by appointing a minister of sanitation in the person of Honorable Kofi Adam, the member of parliament for Navrongo. As a pen pusher who doubles as a watchdog and gatekeeper, it will be disingenuous on my part, at least to say the least, that all this show of gallantry would not end up being a talk shop, but all the authorities engaged in the sanitation business would indeed walk the talk. It is, however, my candid opinion that if this war on sanitation is to be won, then it takes more than just government. Here, I do not mean the government in power, but the contributions of the governed as well, to a large extent. Pay a visit to any of the so-called ceremonial or principal streets in Accra, and you will not fail to see the mounting heaps of filth or garbage, what the Americans call trash, on the shoulders of streets, pedestrian walkways, in alleys, at car parks, markets, commercial centers, and in any conceivable place. The repugnant smell they leave in their trail is so obnoxious that a first-time visitor or a tourist will be shell-shocked to witness such an eyesore. As a people, we pride ourselves as the first country south of the Sahara to have gained independence from white imperialist rule. We also say with a lot of pride as being the most developed country apart from South Africa, having attained independence in 1957. So the nagging question which keeps on haunting us is, where did we go wrong? Where and when did Ghana lose all this enlightenment, beautiful and clean environment, and the best crop of intellectuals ever to be produced in the history of the continent? As a young growing child in Accra, I remember the town council, what has come to be known as Accra Metropolitan Authority or AMA, had health inspectors known as Saman Saman. Saman Saman is not a ghost as we know it in Akan language, but a corrupted version of the word sermons. Yes, indeed, when found culpable of the law, these Saman Saman will indeed summon you to the sanitation court, and when found guilty of contravening any sanitation laws as enacted by the District Assembly, you were convicted or made to pay a fine. The presence of these Saman Saman was so intimidating that I do not think it is a coincidence they are called Saman, which means ghost in the Akan language. These inspectors had the power to pry into the privacy of bedrooms, inspect chamber pots still containing solid and liquid waste, dig deep into barrels holding drinking water of households, inspect choked gutters, weedy environments, and even sometimes unclean cooking utensils which have been left overnight in the washing basin. The fear of arrest, prosecution, and subsequent conviction of potential culprits injected fear in many households, and you will see compounds swept clean and cooking utensils cleaned spick and span. That was then. Today the story is different. As we grow, develop, and advance in age as a country, we are filled woefully to ensure that we develop new, modern, and innovative ways of keeping our surroundings clean and to live healthier and quality lifestyles. We spit saliva and release flames with careless abandon onto concrete pavements and smear it underneath our chalewotes as if we are saving a situation. During heavy downpour, we throw our domestic waste either tied in black polythene bags or wholly into running water, into gutters and drains, with a view that they end up in big water bodies like rivers or streams or even into the sea. Our coastal areas have been converted to landfill sites where anything and everything is dumped. We openly defecate at our beaches, under bridges, and into black polythene bags and send them flying like a jet fighter as they land like a bomb into alleys and other homes. Accra as a city is reeling heavily under the burden of migration, and as a city, it has witnessed unprecedented explosion of migrants from all parts of the country, especially from the north. This shift in the demographic dynamics of this country has led to the springing up of several slums in the city. These places obviously lack the basic and fundamental infrastructure needs like supply of clean water, adequate electricity, places of convenience, and a proper place for waste disposal. The AMS inability to manage and contain These occurrences has led to one of the principal reasons why the city is sinking under the weight of filth and environmental degradation. If the Minister of Sanitation and by extension the AMA mayor are going to win this war, then they have an uphill task to circumvent. There is a need for them to roll up their sleeves and employ new and pragmatic methods never explored to deal with this canker of a problem, which has been a Waterloo for most former mayors of the city. Most importantly, a key stakeholder in this fight is the public or ordinary citizens. Education, in my view, has been overflogged, and there is the dire need to enact sanitation rules with the objective of enforcing the bylaws rigorously and vigorously, without fear and favor. For as the saying goes, cleanliness is next to godliness. For Perspectives, this is Alfred Hughes reporting here in Accra.
With that, we end the program for today. Before we go, a quick feedback. Dominic, you reached us from Malam, Accra. Your message read, "Thank you so much for this program. I never knew of it till I chanced on it a few months ago. Since then, I've never missed the program. Someone told me you have a repeat slot. Please, when do you do a rebroadcast?" Thanks, Dominic. Your message is similar to a number of comments received. Very soon, we shall let you know the new slot for the rebroadcast. In the interim, you can visit GBC Online by logging on to gbcghana.com. Please check on podcast and you can have access to all our recent programs. Our text and WhatsApp line is 0244-538-168. 0244-538-168. You can also tweet at us at KObinchere or at the GBC Ghana. The email is tkok212@gmail.com. tkok212@gmail.com. On behalf of Joyce Jechi, I am Kingsley Obinchere once again saying, please keep the peace and be our guest same time next week.